You are now entering the world of Blissful Living, broadcasting around the globe and on the Blissful Living Network with Rochelle Marie Lawson. Are you lacking energy, clarity, and that sense of true well-being? Are you overworked, underpaid, and know that you deserve more in life? You are not alone. Improve your wellness, wisdom, and wealth so that you can step into living the life of your dreams. And now, here's your host of Blissful Living, the queen of feeling fabulous, Rochelle Marie Lawson.
The following segment is a continuation of our conversation from last week's show. We jump right in where we left off. Please enjoy.
Yes, indeed, it does. I mean, what you're pointing out, the American Trauma Society asked us to help them develop a project because of what you just mentioned. Doctors in the trauma units, I mean, they've just spent, you know, 6 or 8 hours trying to save somebody's life in the operating theater. And they either succeeded or they failed. The next part of the job is they've got to go talk to the family about it, whatever the result. That is an entirely different skill set and one they did not have. I mean, you wonder why they blow that conversation. They've had no training. And it must be one of the most difficult conversations any human being has to have with anybody. And they had zero training in it. So why do they mess it up? I think it's obvious. So our whole program was like, well, maybe we can give these guys at least a few clues on how to set this up so it can be a more compassionate, more effective, and more a clearer conversation. That's because what's important at that moment in time is a person can go down two roads. They can go. They're going to grieve either way over an injury or over the loss of life. There's a very big difference is it a healthy grief, where the person is honored and mourned, and the grief is processed, and they come out the other side, and they've learned from it, and it has deepened their life, or is it a destructive kind of grief, where they go into neglect and abuse? I mean, the divorce figures on people who lose their children to accidents is horrendous. Families
fall apart. I can imagine.
So the point was, can we help people stack their odds better of going down grieving in a healthy way versus a self-destructive or destructive way? And that makes a difference to the entire family and entire community. So that's why compassion is important, because it can help people go down the right road. You will always remember those moments. They're indelible when you are in one of those horribly vulnerable situations, where a family member might have been injured or killed, and you're asked to go to the hospital. Whether you're treated with compassion or not, you will remember for the rest of your life.
Oh, for sure. I mean, yeah. You know, for sure. It's you know, and you know, it could be just something not so serious as just going to the hospital, but just going to the clinic for your doctor's visit, or, you know, something like that. You will always remember that person that showed you compassion versus the person that didn't. And it really is very interesting, and people have very different perceptions about that.
They do.
But it's
such a powerful force in life. What I'm very proud of our student volunteers, I mean, our goal in the way they are trained and the practice they get, I mean, they have to commit to volunteering with us for at least a year.
Uh-huh.
And most of them volunteer for 2 or 3. The goal being, it's in their bones by the time they leave, and therefore can withstand medical school or whatever other school they go to, and it becomes part of who they are, not just a skill.
And I'm sure they learn how to be compassionate with themselves as well, because I think that is a key component. Because if you know, it's great, you know, to be compassionate with others, but if you can't be compassionate with yourself, eventually the house of cards will begin to fall. And so I think it's wonderful that you guys do this work, you know, with, you know, future healthcare professionals, or maybe just future people who, you know, just want to really learn just how to, you know, be a lot more, have a show and exhibit and feel and just be in the essence of being a lot more compassionate, not only with themselves, but with others as well. Now, what I want to ask you about is, you know, I know that being in the healthcare profession, it can have its stresses like everything else. And I think when you're dealing with the lives and the well-being of people, it becomes particularly interesting. A lot of people don't take responsibility for their health and well-being. And then when they have a crisis, then they want everybody to, show them compassion that they didn't show themselves and thus led them to the situation that they're in. But life is full of stresses. And I want to ask you, which professions do you think are most at risk for stress-related problems and why?
Well, I can tell you that the healthcare professions in general are in poorer physical and mental health than most other occupations. That's the irony of it.
Mm-hmm.
The very people who know about health are the worst at it, or among the worst. I mean, nurses experience more on-the-job violence than any other occupation. And so, you know, nursing assistants get more injured more often than anybody else. They get injured more often than construction workers. So, I mean, the stress scores of palliative care folks, you know, they're higher than patients who've been newly diagnosed with breast cancer. I mean, they're off the charts, the stress levels. Surgeon rates of suicide are, you know, 2 to 3 times the national average.
Right.
You know, I mean, so, yeah, they're in healthcare, and essentially that's why we created our new program. You talked about compassion for yourself. We were being asked by our student volunteers, it's like, well, I want to go into this field. I want to make a difference in other people's lives. I don't want to burn out. How do I not burn out? Which we felt was a very honest question, and it deserved an honest answer. And that's why the last few years, we've been involved in creating this program called Oxygen for Caregivers. And it's for anybody, any caregiver, whether it's a professional or a family caregiver. But we've specialized in the professionals at this point, although we are still very involved in teaching through our work is used in a couple of thousand churches and their caregiving committees and things like that. So we're still very involved with that. But so you asked about stress in the professions and why is that? Well, and this applies to emergency services folks too. People whose job brings them face to face with human suffering on a regular basis are dealing more than with just heavy workload. I mean, all kinds of occupations have heavy workload, and that's stressful physically and mentally, and that can lead to burnout. But there's another aspect of burnout called compassion fatigue. It's a real thing. I didn't want to believe it when we started on this project, but it turns out it is, and it's an emotional exhaustion from giving and giving and giving until you have nothing left.
To give, yeah.
And I'm sure you know what that's like.
I mean, I could totally relate to it. Like you mentioned something just a few minutes ago with regards to, you know, healthcare professionals, and here they are taking care of people, and I'm saying from doctors to medical assistants or, you know, nursing assistants or whatever, case may be. You have a doctor that you go to see and he says, oh, you need to lose weight, but your doctor is overweight themselves. You know, it's the same
right.
thing. Or a nurse is, you know, you got to take care of your blood pressure, but they're on 4 or 5 different high blood pressure medications. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's kind
yeah.
of, you're telling me I need to do this, but look at you.
Right.
How are you, you know, why would I do it if you can't even be the example for me?
Yeah.
So it's very, very interesting. And I have seen, you know, a ton of professionals. You know, there was a study that was done by Kaiser Permanente with regards to nurses and the rate in which they suffer back injuries. And I have seen it time and time and time again where a nurse will, you know, try to move a patient or lift a patient or do whatever they do because it's just in the midst of their job. and they injure their back, and then, you know, they can't work, and, you know, and it becomes a I want to say, never-ending cycle with regards to that, because what happens is they actually lose the ability to do the thing that they love doing the most, which is to help care for others. And so, you know, it's tough, you know, with the demands that we have today in healthcare. It really is do more with less skilled individuals. You know, there's more of a flux of utilizing lower skilled professional people. I can't call them professional, but lower skilled people such as medical assistants or nursing assistants in areas where, you know, nurses, registered nurses actually dwelled in, and that was their arena. And so, you know, and then the nurses are expected to do other things that they didn't necessarily do. And it's just all these expectations, all these demands, you know, and you have patient loads and things, and you're just trying to do the best. Everybody's just trying to do the best that they can with what they have to deal with. But eventually, like you say, they suffer from, you know, this emotional burnout. And I want to move into that because I want you to define for the audience exactly what your definition or what Adventures in Care's definition is with regards to burnout.
Well, burnout is to do with the work environment and the workload. If you want the actual definition, I'll try and find it for you here.
Well, no, you just give me, you know, what you think, you know, what you've seen or what you experienced, what, you know.
Well, no, there's very good research on what burnout is specifically. And then the symptoms are when people are feel like they're not accomplishing anything. In other words,
right.
you're spread too thin to actually be effective. Mm-hmm. Then that's the doing more with less and doing even more with even less until you're trying to do everything with nothing, pretty much. You know,
right.
And it's that. But then there's the burnout is to do with that. But then there's the traumatization. Rachel Naomi Remen, she's a doctor, teaches out of UC San Francisco Medical School, and she said, you know, the expectation that you can be face-to-face with suffering and loss on a regular basis all day and never be touched by it is about as unrealistic as thinking you can walk through water without getting wet. That suffering that you are face-to-face with has an effect on you. And I'm not talking about just once, but as you know, nurses see it hundreds of times. And so it eventually causes a certain kind of traumatization, first secondary traumatization that goes into vicarious trauma and things like that. So mm-hmm. you've not just got exhaustion, you've got traumatization factors too. And that is what they call a stress-informed environment, and that's why healthcare professionals as a whole and emergency services people are, as a rule, more vulnerable to, you know, use the catch-all term, burnout, but it also includes compassion fatigue and moral distress is another factor, you know, mm-hmm. when you're doing things that, or you're asked to do things that you don't think are quite right, you know, like discharging a patient when you think they're not ready to go home yet, except insurance is no paying for it any longer, but you've got to do it, and fighting with your conscience all day long about that is exhausting. And then witness to, you know, certain images in your head that you can't quite forget because somebody was really mangled or a lot of blood and gore, that stuff is tough to deal with, and it takes care. These are what I'm describing are occupational hazards of being a caregiver.
Mm.
And nobody gets, very few people now get training in that. I mean, if you go into other professions, if you're in the building industry and you're on a construction site, you wear a hard hat and you wear gloves and you have protective gear and you have certain safety precautions. Well, in healthcare, there might be physical safety precautions, but there are not emotional and psychological safety precautions of coming face-to-face with tragic events day after day.
Mm.
And so... Our whole approach is how do you first understand the problem clearly and understand what these occupational hazards are, and then build into your life the solution. And what we found is that the people who do this well and the people who can be in these careers and thrive year after year, they don't address self-care so much as a regimen, but they see it as a lifelong journey where they're gradually building more resilience into their life year after year. And they do it in three main ways. All the folks who really thrive have tremendous self-awareness. And there's four main ways you can develop that. They all have a good, healthy sense of balance between care of others and looking after themselves. And they do both. And we often say, you know, if you've got looking after six patients, actually you've got seven, regard yourself as one of them. You keep yourself in the loop. Keep yourself so you're mindful of your where your responsibilities end and theirs begin. You know, you've got this sense of balance between you and others. And then the third thing is the connections people have, the healing connections that renew us. There are lifelines for when we're going down a dark hole to rescue people. And they are the things that you can hold on to in tough times and bring you back to who you are. So the awareness, the balance, the connections, those we call them the ABCs of resilience. And that's what we found is the people who thrive in these difficult professions, they build these in, not just they don't do a course on it and be done with it. Every year they're getting stronger in all those areas and developing a deeper wisdom, a deeper strength. And what I've been talking about a lot is that when it comes to self-care, it's not about excellence. Other things are. But when it's about self-care, it's more about wholeness.
Mm.
And we should not confuse excellence with strength, because it's a very brittle kind of strength where you're about as good as your last success, and that's it. But wholeness is the ability to embrace your entire life and all of your experiences, the good ones, the not-so-good ones, and they're all part of you. And getting your heart around that whole thing so that you are authentically you. Yes, and you got a few nicks and scrapes, and you know that's why the raggedy metaphor works so well. You're a bit frayed around the edges, but well-loved, you know.
Right.
Right? And so that's the wholeness aspect of it. Some people refer to it as the spirituality of imperfection. You can embrace your imperfections, too. And that's what gives people resilience, and that's the beauty of it. So it's understanding the problem and the occupational hazards of it, and your own personal warning signs. That's important too. Knowing you well enough—that's the self-awareness part. So that we have a wonderful doctor who talked about it. He has his own SOB index. So I don't know if I can say this on the radio, but everybody knows what SOB stands for, right?
Yeah.
So, and he said, when your patients are starting to act like SOBs, it's an indicator that you need some time out because you're projecting your own inner pain on everybody else and thinking they're acting badly when in fact your own stress level has just gone past the red line, and it's time for you to take some time to notch that stress level back down again. And I think, you know, doing this project, the greatest advice I came across is, you know, regarding compassion fatigue, in the mid-1990s when this term was coined by Charles Figley, but originally, compassion fatigue was called the embitterment syndrome.
Mm.
And in some ways, I think that's a more accurate or descriptive term, because we have to, above all else, guard against the heart becoming bitter or jaded or cynical or snarky, because when you do that, that's when it colors everything else in your life, and it colors all your relationships, and it's the exact opposite of blissful living. I mean, it taints everything.
Right.
And so I would say whatever you need to do to cleanse the heart of resentment and any bitterness is job one. Of course, you've got to be self-aware to notice that. And then you've got to be humble enough to then do something about it, because it is humbling when that happens. And humility will restore you back to a certain place of simplicity and innocence in dealing with this that can cleanse the heart. And so that's that's a lot about the solution side of this. And our Oxygen for Caregivers program is essentially those two pieces, understanding the problem better, and then how do you build solution into your own life. And we don't bother, you know, giving people a particular method, because there are a lot of excellent methods all over, but people got to pick the one that fits with them and their lifestyle.
So when you guys are, like, you know, engaging with a group of individuals and, you know, they're going through your program with regards to, you know, learning about compassion and, you know, learning exactly what it is, how they can exhibit it, you know, the phases that go along with it and, you know, the modality that you teach. What would you say is the number one thing that people believe about compassion but is really a misnomer?
Oh, I would say when people think it's a personality trait, that it's fixed.
Okay.
I think that's the biggest myth. People think, oh, this is a compassionate person. Well, sadly, I've seen amazingly compassionate people burn out because you could say compassionate is an infinite force, but we are finite human beings, and
right,
we have limits. And so, in fact, compassion fatigue affects the most caring and most dedicated people first. And the first symptom of compassion fatigue is people work harder. They're trying to overcome the weaknesses of the system or the undercapacity kind of stuff, and work harder, work longer. But then bitterness starts to seep in, and resentment, and, you know, all kinds of things. And so your capacity for compassion is not fixed, and it's not just a trait of personality. And granted, some people are naturally more skilled at this than others, but on any given day, any one of us can be either more or less compassionate, and as I'm sure you and everybody else will admit, you know,
right,
you know, somebody cuts you off in traffic, and, you know, maybe you're not so compassionate right that moment, you know.
Right. You may flip them the birdie two or three times.
exactly. Not realizing that they're on their way to a medical appointment for a loved one or something.
Right.
You know, you never can think of that. And it's like, oh, yeah, I guess I missed the mark on that one. So the idea is to not take it for granted. Because the tendency is to take it for granted if you say, well, some people have it, some people don't, and it's fixed. And I always like the thing, you know, to remember, be aware of static thinking. It's dangerous. Life is fluid. Life is a constant river. And so things are always changing, including us. And
so now what would be some tips that, you know, so we got these listeners out here listening to, you know, us talking about compassion. And do you have any tips that you could share with the listeners with regards to helping them to maybe be just a little bit more compassionate or recognizing, you know, things that they could do to be compassionate? Any tips that you can share with the listeners that, you know, they can take away and say, okay, you know, today I'm going to do this, or today, you know, I'm going to just try and evoke a little bit more compassion in my life. What can you share with them? Because I know they're probably anxious and they want, you know, they've been hearing us talk about it and they're like, okay, we got it. We get how it affects, you know, those ourselves as well as those that we may be caring for. But what are some tips, I want to say, that you can share with them that to help them to maybe bring out a little, to, you know, get that compassion out of them, or to, you know, maybe avoid burning out from being so compassionate?
Right. The first tip is to say that it's a journey rather than an instant fix.
Mm-hmm.
But there are four key ingredients to a conversation that includes compassion, but those same four things apply to yourself, and they build self-awareness. So let me say what those four things are.
Okay.
They're really your compass. There are these four cardinal directions to help you chart your course. And what they are is, the first one is attention. It's your ability to give undivided attention to somebody else. It's also your ability to pay attention to yourself, to consciously choose to be aware of you. And by that, I mean all of you, not just the parts you like, but to be able to carefully watch yourself. And some mindfulness practices help develop that. But even, for example, the Gaelic way of observing Lent is, in the more mystical side of things, is to not so much give anything up, but to watch yourself more carefully do what you do. And because when you do that, and you're doing something that is not good for your health, you know, you're eating that pint of ice cream out of the fridge for the second time today or something, you know, it's just like watching yourself do it until you almost can't stand yourself watching yourself do it anymore, right?
Right.
And you give it up naturally. It's like, you know what, no, I got to leave that alone. So the attention is key, but then so is acknowledgement, which literally means confess knowledge. When you acknowledge someone else, you can appreciate them, you focus on what they've got going for them, but you also acknowledge yourself and what you've got going on with you, which might be positive or negative. If you're wrestling with something or struggling with something, is to honestly acknowledge that. In other words, be a faithful witness to your experience or to somebody else's. So those are the first two, attention and acknowledgement. The third one is affection. So it's not just observing and being honest about it, but it's also being wholehearted and looking upon yourself and looking upon others with kindness, a warmth, the human touch, which humanizes it all, so that you can laugh at your own shortcomings. You don't take yourself so seriously that you beat yourself up for failing. Because if you do, then you don't look at yourself so closely anymore because it hurts. You beat yourself up when you see it, right? So you stop doing it. So if you're kind and look upon yourself with affection, then you're more likely to see yourself more clearly, as with others too. And then the fourth one is acceptance, which is your capacity to embrace it all with heart. Embrace others, they're the good points, the bad points, the in-between points, as well as yourself. So and by acceptance, I don't mean condoning bad behavior. What I mean is, here we are now, I accept myself or someone else just the way they are. It's like a house guest arrives, and they've been in the rain, or they're all bedraggled or something. You just accept them the way they are, you know, with no judgment. Because that is the way they are right then and there. So if you can do that with yourself, you can do that with others. In this way, you extend compassion to others because everybody needs these four gifts. You're like Santa Claus. You're showing up with four gifts in your bag and you're giving them. You're giving them your undivided attention. You're acknowledging them, and especially what's right with them. You're being affectionate and warm and human about it, and you're also accepting them for who they are. These four things are core.
I think that you guys out there listening, that those four tips to compassion are really, key to helping you, for one, so that you don't burn out when you're being compassionate, if you're caring for someone you love or if you're in the healthcare profession and, you know, you might be feeling that you are burning out or you're just done with it. Attention, acknowledgement, affection, and acceptance are, you know, four beautiful words that start with A that you can begin to incorporate into your life today. And I would say to you guys out there listening to just start with yourself and let that transcend outward into your world and just see it reflect upon, you know, like a mirror reflecting, looking back at yourself. It's a beautiful thing, and hopefully you will not go down the road of burnout, but you will continue traveling down your path to bliss. And so now we're at the end of the show. And Simon, I really want you to just give the listeners some information as to how they can connect with you and, learn more about the work that Adventures in Caring is doing.
Thanks. We have a lot more resources on our site. And And there's a lot of videos on there. So if anyone's interested, go to adventuresincaring.org. And on that site, what we have for family caregivers, we have stuff for professional caregivers, we have stuff for people who want to volunteer with us. We are a nonprofit agency. We don't get any government funding. We don't get any funding from the university or the hospital or anything like that. It's all private. So if anybody wants to help this mission go forward, please, we would love it. A donation, a contribution, a gift, or connecting with us with people who need this. All our work is taught in a team setting, and I think that's the most insidious thing about burnout is that it's isolating.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we learn it together, you essentially create a support group for everybody's well-being. That is
absolutely, absolutely wonderful. So you guys out there listening, I would love for you to go to adventuresincaring.org. Check out the website. If what we talked about today sparks your interest, you want to learn more, you want to engage, you want to help, you want to volunteer, you want to, you know, do whatever you can to help further this along, because it is very important in our society as we begin to go forward in our society. You know, we're going to need a lot more compassion, and not just necessarily with caring, but just compassion with ourselves and then just in life in general. So please, please, please check out adventuresincaring.org. I would like to thank you, Simon Fox, for being a guest on Blissful Living today. It was really, really nice talking to you about such a wonderful, heartwarming subject of compassion. And unfortunately, we're at the end of our show, so I'm going to have to say to all of you out there listening, again, please check out adventuresincaring.org. You can connect with Simon. You can see the stories and videos and all that they have to offer. And if it's something that's speaking to you, then I highly suggest that you do that. And as always, I want you to check out the sponsors of the show, healthhealingwellness.com, as well as alldaycableinc.com. They have some wonderful things that may be able to help you, you know, with regards to your business or your health and well-being. So please check them out. And until next week, I want to wish all of you peace to your mind, wellness to your body, and tranquility to your spirit. This is Rochelle Marie Lawson, the Queen of Feeling Fabulous. And I am saying have a phenomenally fantastic week as you travel down your path to bliss. Take good care, everyone, and goodbye for now.
Thank you for joining Rochelle Marie Lawson on Blissful Living. To contact Rochelle Marie and to find out more about Blissful Living, click on Blissful Living for You link right here on the Blissful Living Network. Catch all the Blissful Living episodes on demand and available for download 24/7 on blissfulliving4you.com. Until next week, may your life be filled with peace, wellness, abundance, and prosperity.